Hi everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Respectfully Disagree. So today we're going to talk about something which Indians generally love talking about, and on the team it's a pet favorite, which is about our relationship with our parents. And we're going to debate the question of, do we need to give back to our parents? It's a very exciting topic. So to start off with, everybody state where you stand and which position you're going to argue. So I am going to argue that yes, we do need to give back to our parents. This is Shrishti, your host, by the way.
Hi, this is Rohita, and I'm, for the first time, I think, in the middle. And I'm going to say that, yeah, I mean, you do need to give back to your parents, but only to an extent.
Hey, it's Carla. Yeah, I think we definitely have to give back to our parents.
This is interesting because I think we've rarely all found ourselves somewhere on the same side of the spectrum. So to start off with, let's talk about Carla and I, since we feel strongly about, like, you need to give back to your parents. So Carla, what do you think is the biggest argument in favor of this point?
Well, our parents give us life and they give us whatever nurturing education and head start we have that sort of puts us on the path to who we become. So I think at some point when they are old and infirm, that circle of life requires us to be their caretakers. And I think that that's a perfectly reasonable sort of balance and a perfectly reasonable assumption and presumption.
Okay, so I agree with you that they give us everything we have and everything we are. But it's also to do with the fact that that's not always a benevolent act, like the act of giving life to somebody. It's just a societal norm that many people are obliged to follow. And even after people are born, especially in India, I think people can relate a lot to the fact that parents want to mold their child in a particular way. And it's often for their own prestige and their own family's reputation, rather than actually giving their child the freedom and independence and allowing them to grow into their own person, so to speak. So I think what you're saying makes sense if parents also are super benevolent and really are good parents to children. But that's not often the case, especially in India.
Yeah, I mean, I do think anyone who's tried to parent a child under the age of 10 knows that it's not possible to do without, like, an enormous amount of self-sacrifice. Like, it's just not possible, unless you're a completely negligent, absent parent, in which case you're probably committing several crimes, right? But unless you're doing that, keeping children alive and, like, somewhat healthy and, like, moderately thriving is in and of itself an exercise in self-restraint, self-sacrifice, and in many ways limiting parents' own aspirations and hopes and dreams and many other things. So I don't know that I agree with that. I think that later when children become adults, right, or young adults, that dynamic changes. But there is a time in life when children are completely helpless and dependent on people who do sacrifice a huge amount of themselves to keep kids alive.
Yeah, but my question is, how much of that comes from a place of wanting to do this for the child alone? And I guess it's a question of whether the intent matters, because do parents sacrifice a lot for the sake of their child or for the sake of having a child that is respectable and whatever, like for the sake of society, log kya kahenge, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so I don't know if it matters in a way, because, like, even at the later stage of life, right? Let's say elderly parents who cannot take care of themselves and for health reasons require constant sort of supervision or require their kids to be managing their healthcare and their food and all of that kind of stuff. Is the child doing that because they 100% really want to be, like, feeding their old infirm parent? Or is it because society expects them to be caretakers of, you know, the people who raise them? Does it really matter? I don't know. How pure your intentions are, I'm not sure it really matters.
But I also wonder, like, what does this kind of idea of needing to give back do to people who don't have good relationships with their parents, you know? And there's also the fact that a lot of people don't choose to be parents. Like, I think especially in our country, people don't think through the fact that you're having a child. You know, you have to get married and you have to produce babies. A lot of the times you don't even know this might happen if you, you know. So, I mean, in those circumstances, like, it's kind of like raising by default. You know what I mean? And so...
so dark.
I mean, yeah, but then they mess you up more than they do good for you. And then detaching from them is the only way to, like, preserve yourself. So what do you do in those circumstances?
Yeah, so I think everything I've said so far presumes a relatively healthy, not completely harm-free, but a relatively healthy, functional relationship between parent and child. Now, the moment that that crosses over into something harmful, you know, more harmful than it is good, and that doesn't even have to be, you know, emotionally abusive or physically abusive. It could just mean harmful, right? And you know, for example, restricting a child's autonomy so much so that they're not thriving, right? That they're not able to thrive. So things like that are inherently doing more harm than good. Yeah. And that throws everything I've said, I think, out the window, actually.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure how much a kid owes a parent who's harmed them.
Yeah, and there's also the question of how, what do we mean when we say giving back, right? Is it giving back in kind, or what is it, like a tangible giving back, or is it intangible? Because a lot of what parents do for us, however harmful it may or may not be, is very intangible. There's a lot of invisible labor that goes into it, lots of emotional labor, lots of sacrifices, like you said, that goes into it. So how can you ever pay somebody back in that sense? And that brings up the question of, is it even a transactional relationship that we can think of it in those terms?
So I'll tell you something interesting. As you were saying this, I was thinking about the difference between American culture and Indian culture in the sense of, like, how do you quantify what families do for each other? And in the US, there are a lot of ways in which the culture of parenting is far more transactional. So, for example, there are many, many, it's a sort of common cultural thing for parents to say to children that I expect you to do certain chores around the house, and in exchange for those chores, you will get your weekly allowance or whatever it is. Basically, you'll be paid to perform part of your duties of being a part of this community, this household. In India, those things are expected, right? You want to be a part of this community. Everybody plays their role. Everybody does their part. Even when kids get older, in the States, there's a lot of, okay, parents will say, we'll pay for your college education, but once you get a job, you pay us back. It's a loan, right? Mm-hmm. We pay for this, we enable it, but then when you can, you pay us back. Here, I don't think I've ever heard of any such thing, right? But I do think that when, I've never liked the transactional nature of these sort of, this American culture around that. But the problem is that when it's not clear, and when it's a little squishier, then there are these enmeshments and these emotional entanglements that actually make things a little bit less clear and make parents feel like they can overstep into kids' autonomy a lot more, right? Because you're part of this sort of collective group.
I also feel like in pop culture, this, I mean, we don't talk about this enough, but the idea that a parent should put their child before themselves and their own dreams is so all-pervasive, you know? Like, you stop having a life once your child comes into the picture, and we see it in endless films, be it Dangal or be it whatever movies that show the parent-child relationship. In fact, I remember, like, wow, I'm going to bring up Girls again, the new Grey's Anatomy, but that scene where, like, they're cutting, you know, in Girls, the main character is Lena Dunham's character, Hannah. And, you know, the scene where her parents are cutting her off and the dad is like, no, she needs our support. And the mom is like, dude, I work so hard. I want, like, a country house. I want to retire to a nice home. And you're just like, oh my God, yeah. Like, this person is such a drain on the parents' resources. And I was like, okay, I'm seeing this from their perspective. And I am such a drain. I have been such a drain on my parents' resources.
Like, these are the tangible things that we're talking about, right? Like, paying back college loans, or just, like, this has to do a lot with money, but there's a lot into parenting, like, emotional labor. I mean, especially, I mean, unfortunately, it's still a persisting reality that mothers tend to take on a lot of emotional labor for their kids, and they, I don't know, teach them, help them with homework, when they're in school, you know, help them with extracurriculars, take them to classes, whatever, or things like that are there for them to listen to friend drama or something like that. Or even if it's not mothers, whoever, whichever parent is doing this, that's all like forms of emotional support that are formative and they shape a child's experience and worldview and everything, right? How do you really like pay that back? And that is an investment of energy and time that you can't get back, and there's nothing to do about it. So I guess that kind of shows that you can't really pay your parents back. It's not inherently possible.
I mean, sure, you can't pay them back because the sacrifices and the emotional labor is immeasurable. But the problem is that the society puts so much pressure, and let's say on mothers in particular, right? Society puts so much pressure on mothers to basically give up so much of themselves for these 15 or 20 years that they're raising these children, and forces them to essentially give up their careers, give up a lot of their social lives, like abandon all of these things that they cared about, and focus all their energy on these children and the rearing of these children. And then what happens when those children turn 20 and basically say, yeah, whatever, I'm going to go make my own decisions and live on my own, and I don't care about you anymore, and I'm just going to do what I want outside of your home and outside of your sort of dominion and everyday life. Mm. What does that do to that person who's just spent 20 years basically being told by everybody that this is your entire focus and this is your entire life? Where does it leave them, right? If now that child behaves as if, you know, that, let's say, mother has no say in their life. I'm not saying it justifies mothers being overly domineering over their adult kids' lives. I'm just saying that I understand it. I'm sympathetic.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean also. I mean, if in that same situation, the child is just like, okay, I'm going to pay you back for my college expenses. I'm going to pay you back what I think you have spent on me my entire life. And that's it. Bye. I'm cutting ties. I'm doing whatever I want. That's also, I mean, you have technically paid them back for whatever they've done in terms of tangible, like monetary, whatever. But it's still devastating, like you said. So I don't know. And I have a few situations if you want to go through them.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay. Love situations.
Okay. So, and this is kind of like the interplay between like the tangible and intangible stuff, right? So for example, if your parents pay for your college and your education and everything about that makes you who you are and makes you a citizen, a useful citizen in the whatever, and do they have a say in your professional life and in your career and what you choose to do after this?
Ooh, this is a tough one.
This is a great situation.
Okay, yeah. So I would say no, they don't have a say in your career trajectory, but I'll tell you where it does get squishy. Is, let's say, the choice of schooling, like the choice of what sets you up on your career track. If, let's say, a parent says, I'll pay for grad school, but I'll only pay for a certain type of grad school. So if you want to go to, let's say, business school, where I believe that you'll get a job where this money will come back in spades once you start earning, so it's worth the investment, right? Then I think this is a worthy investment. But I don't think, and I'm just using a very cliche example, but I don't think that a master in fine arts, where you're not going to ever make money from it, is a worthwhile financial investment, right? So in that way, I don't know who kids are to decide for their parents how to sort of spend that education money, right? I could see a parent not thinking it's worthwhile to invest in a type of education that might never yield financial results.
So I'm going to bring up a bit of a disruptive thought here, I'm not sure. But I feel like this example itself, like you pointed out that, hey, what shapes them as a citizen in a sense? I feel like this kind of points out that maybe the whole parent-child relationship and like parents making their kids to such a huge extent is a bit messed up, and maybe
totally.
We need more state responsibility. I can't believe I'm bringing up this point and not Rohita, you know. But I think that maybe we rethink this entire idea. That I also feel like this enables a lot of like concentration of capital, even in the way that we function, right? Because we're like, we owe our children everything. I'm like, I owe my parents everything. It kind of ensures that you live the kind of life that they want you to, and then, you know, you're always looking out for yourself as a family, like, how do we have the most resources, how do we get the best house, how do we, you know, and you don't really look at collectively. I think it closes you in more and more. So I wonder, like, the biggest problem to change my stance with this whole idea of, like, owing parents and parents giving so much to you is that it actually closes you up from having a lot of that love, empathy, care for, like, the rest of society, and ties you to these people in a very, like, unhealthy way.
Yeah, and that also brings up the point of, like, is it even ethical to have children if you're going to view them as an investment for your retirement or something, right? Like, it's like, you tell them to pick like an engineering degree or MBA or whatever. That's just very, very common in India, right? Because you want them to do well and earn money and settle down, and then eventually be able to care for them also. Like, it's like a cyclical loop. It's never like a, it's like, it's not a linear chain, right?
But that's a bit cynical, no?
I mean, you parent this human being, you raise them, you like, so shouldn't you be able to decide if they are in a retirement investment fund? I don't know, because I just feel so much, the amount you have to give a child in society today is crazy. I don't think that burden should fall on parents.
So I wonder, like, where does it stop, right? Where is the line? Because I definitely think, even I do sense, I think, from a lot of children, even very adult children, a sense of entitlement, right? That, like, their parents owe them something, right? And they should be able to sort of have their parents' support in multiple ways. And a lot of times it's financial, right? But so if we're saying that children shouldn't have to choose engineering degrees and pursue financially lucrative careers just to support their parents, at what point is it ethical for a parent to say, you're not my financial responsibility anymore. I want the beach shack in Goa, and that's where I want to go. And, like, I don't want to deal with paying for your whatever, right? Yeah. When is that ethical? Is it 18? Is it 21? Is it 30? Like, when is it?
But that's the thing. Like, if you're making a decision to have a child, you, I mean, these are things that come.
You have to pay for them forever?
You don't have to. The point is that that's what. Okay, that's a good point. I don't know.
I mean, you know, yeah, at a certain point.
The older I get, the more sympathetic I get with my own parents. Yeah, like, of course. Every year I'm like, oh my God, how do you manage this with two babies? I mean, yeah. I would die.
Yeah. Your mom's a badass. So the older you get, the more you realize how much your mom is a badass. Yeah.
No, I completely agree. Yeah. I mean, sounding like I'm disparaging.
People throw that into a corner by saying, you know.
Yeah.
I do find it a bit rich for, like, a 30-year-old person to expect their parents to financially support a lot of their hopes and dreams, but then act as if they should operate entirely independently and autonomously and never have to look back to that generation and think about their responsibilities to that generation.
Yeah. Okay, I have another situation. suppose your parents' views don't match your own, which is something, again, that a lot of people find situation that a lot of people find themselves in. Like, if you grow up and you come into your own political awakening awareness, and then you find that your parents are bigoted, do you retain any obligation towards them in that sense? If you just cannot get along, if you're fighting all the time over politics, and this is something that I've been seeing in my own friend circle, especially if that kind of implicates you, as in if your parents have views that directly or indirectly affect you also.
I think it's, like, very, very, very common for younger generations to have some politically opposing views from older generations, just because we're a constantly evolving society. So this is, like, the oldest story ever. Like, you know, our parents felt like they were radical and they were living radically different lives and, like, you know, rebelling against the norms, the societal norms of their parents, right? And now we look upon that generation as these, like, fuddy-duddies and boomers, and, you know, we make jokes about them and whatever. But it's the same thing. Like, society is evolving, and in 20, 30 years, people will be talking about all of us in this room the same way, right? So this is just how it goes. So I do think that there are ways to, of course, have, like, wonderful familial bonds with people who are just not as far along on that progression as you are. Now, where it conflicts with identity, I mean, I have friends and I know people who, for example, are not out to close family members, right? And that's one of the most obvious and common ways maybe where this comes up. I think that means you can't ever in that situation have a complete, full relationship with close family members. But you can still have some sort of love and connection to them. It's just that they're only going to see a window into your life. They're not going to see all of your life. They're not going to be involved in your whole life. And that's a negative for them, right? But that's just something that people manage all the time.
Yeah, but it doesn't always have to be, even if it's not that personal. Like, for example, if as a child, you go to college, you get into like the student politics there, you become like really radical and an activist type. And then your parents are bigoted and they completely disavow that kind of behavior and you have to hide it from them or you don't have their approval, basically. I mean, but all the other elements still apply, you know, that they have cared for you, they have nurtured you, they have sent you to the college that you want, they paid for everything, they've invested a lot of emotional labor. You may have had a close relationship with them before, but now it's kind of diverging because of this. So, I mean, what do you do then? I mean, do you still account for all of the previous, like the past things, or does this kind of break that obligation?
I personally think that you don't necessarily owe them a deep emotional attachment, but when things get tough for them later in life, you owe them some amount of care. Right? Whether it's managing their whatever, their healthcare appointments or, you know, whatever it is that like keeps them okay, physically okay, I think you owe them that much no matter what.
But Carla, how do you do that without, like, the problem is often that the easiest thing is to like cut them off emotionally. So then how do you actually care for them in their old or like when they need it? Because you won't know, right? Because you're cut off from
cut
them.
Off, like never speak to them again. I mean, there's a way to disconnect emotionally without disconnecting. I mean, you can still call people once every 2-3 days. Hi, how are you? You know, do you have enough dal at home? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a way to do that without engaging, without bringing your full emotional self to the relationship. That's what I think of when I think of somebody who's sort of emotionally cut off. Now, cut off, never speak to these two people ever again in your life. That to me seems like something that is an appropriate response when there's been some true harm that has occurred in that household, like real harm.
What about harm that builds up over time? There's a lot of trauma that people carry from their relationships with their parents based on like the little things that build up over time. I wouldn't say rarely because I don't have the stats, but more often than not, it's not a big traumatic separation type of event, but more like it just keeps building up until one day it explodes and then you don't know where it came from.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's complicated to navigate. I just had one question which I wanted to bring in here, that what do you do about parents who've, who've committed harm to other, like I think about this often where they've been, you know, indicted for a crime or, you know, what we saw in the case of like Tarun Tejpal and like his daughters, Tia Tejpal, or in the case of, you know, when Vinod Dua was accused and Malika Dua stands on that. So, I mean, what do we owe our parents when they've done harm to society, but with us, they've had a really good relationship? I think for me, that goes back to the point I raised initially about like society versus the parent-child relationship. And just like, I feel like it can become harmful. Like it closes you in and keeps you out of like thinking about broader ramifications. I don't know.
The older I get, the less willing I am to judge people for these choices. I'm not going to say I have a problem.
Yeah, that's something I think about a lot too. Do you owe your parents forgiveness for something like that? And is it even your place to forgive them? I don't know. It's very complicated. But I don't blame people for not cutting their parents off if they do something to somebody else. I mean, it depends, right? On I guess the relationship will deteriorate on its own, but you can't penalize somebody for not cutting their parents off because it's their parent. I mean, they have a whole history with them. And
I also don't think we have any, in these very public examples you've given, Srishti, I don't think we have any idea what has actually happened, what has transpired in that relationship. It's very possible that publicly those children are not willing to air, you know, have some huge public spat or public reckoning or whatever, but that privately they have all but cut off ties, right? So we don't really know what goes on.
Yeah. I mean, both these cases, I was just saying because they've been publicly supportive
defending
of them.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with you. And actually, when I thought about this, I also felt like even in an extreme case where someone has committed a murder or someone has done something like that, I feel like the child, I still understand if you want to keep that relationship with your parents and some, I mean, with whoever's done it, because sometimes that is a form of care also. And in my opinion, I think it may, I mean, I don't know, it's actually sometimes commendable to stick by and care for them in the situation that's right, you know, within the frameworks of the law, of course, but yeah.
Murder parents. Where did this go? We took the most out there example possible.
Yeah. Okay, I have one last situation, which is, do our parents have a say in our love lives? Because they often do want to have a say because they care and they want you to be with somebody who is like a good partner to you, whom they think in their view is stable and provides good companionship. So a lot of the time they say it's for your own good, and a lot of the time they really mean that it's for your own good, but it may differ from your point of view. And there's so many tropes in pop culture where people run away with like the wild vagabond type of person, which the parents are just horrified to learn about because they're like, oh my god, what's gonna happen to my child now? So I don't know. In that situation, do they have a say? Because do they really know what's best for you?
I don't know, dude. No, I think, but like not arranged marriages, but I actually know. If you have a good relationship with them and they're people who matter to you, I always feel like people should have a say because like you need like a panel for stuff.
Panel discussion. Yeah, I mean, listen, we're all so turned off by the like yucky tropes of like the parents wanting, especially daughters, right? Especially young women to like marry well, and what that means and what that carries with it and how gross that is, right? But then there's the other side of it, which is that in like relatively healthy parent-child relationships, parents are also able to see sometimes when kids are in the thick of something that's actually very detrimental to them and is making them deeply unhappy, right? But in the craze of the moment, the kid, you know, the person who's in the relationship themselves is not able to see it. So sometimes it is helpful to have somebody looking out for you and saying, look, this is a harmful situation. Like, this is not a good relationship for you and you should get out of it. But that's not to say that parents should be like, does he have an engineering degree? You know, like,
yeah. I also feel like this whole podcast has made me feel like what a good scenario of like owing your parents and having it held. Because every time we talk, I'm like, oh yeah, but in India, they'd like literally throw you into the fire with a really horrible man and be like, not care about what's good for you. You know what I mean? More often than not, they're marrying you after the shitty person and would be like, don't come back. If it beats you, just stick it out like I did. So do we end this on that dark note?
No! Please! And I'm gonna offer a defense of the nice parents, okay? The nice parents who care about their daughters, but still want to see them married off to somebody who's financially stable, right? And who has good career prospects. These are not completely unwarranted concerns, right? Life is easier if somebody has a steady paycheck. Life is easier if you have a healthcare emergency, it's not gonna leave you destitute. Like, these are things that do make life easier. So I also want to offer a defense of these parents who include some of these in their checklist of what will make a good partner, because they're not completely pulling it out of left field. Like, there is not coming from nowhere, right? It is coming sometimes maybe from a place of care and wanting a good life for that child.
All in all, I feel like we should end on that nice parent defense note, because
some of them exist somewhere
some of
in
them
the world.
Exist. Rights for nice parents. Nice parents deserve rights. But I think that's a great note to end on. This was actually a very fun discussion. I'm taking back a lot from this. Maybe like what a healthy model of like owing and giving back can look like in the presence of one which is overwhelmingly unhealthy that we see around us. That was so emotional.
I know. Go hug your
nice
parents. Your
parents lead you. Talk about modern parents. Okay, see you again next time, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This podcast is brought to you by TS Studios, the production company that brings the Swaddle's creative point of view to original podcasts and films.